From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, has Planet X really been discovered? We'll talk with Jason Martell about that, but here's what's happening. This is a serious problem. You've heard about it. It gets worse. The water supply in Flint, Michigan is so unsafe that the state attorney general there has warned parents to keep their children far from it, including a warning against even bathing. The cash-strapped city of Flint switched from Detroit's municipal water system and began drawing from the Flint River in 2014 to save money. The water was not properly treated to prevent lead from pipes from leaching into the supply. The residents have now been urged to use bottled water and to put filters on faucets. A bottled water company, by the way, owned in part by Diddy Combs and Mark Wahlberg, the actor, pledged to donate 1 million bottles of water to Flint and to continue sending bottles until the crisis is solved. The first delivery from Aqua Hydrate is scheduled to arrive on Wednesday. What an unbelievable situation there. There's a mosquito-borne virus. It's called Zika. It has been linked to brain damage in thousands of babies in Brazil. It is likely to spread to all countries in the Americas, except for Canada and Chile, according to the World Health Organization. I have no idea how they have come up with that. Zika transmission has not yet been reported in the continental United States, although a woman who fell ill with the virus in Brazil later gave birth to a brain-damaged baby in Hawaii. Brazil's health ministry said in November that this virus was linked to a fetal deformation known as microcephaly, in which infants are born with smaller than usual brains. I've never heard of that before. We're going to do a story on that in a show. Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton had a coughing fit that will do little to quell rumors that the former U.S. Secretary of State is in poor health. The 68-year-old Clinton had to stop a speech in West Des Moines, Iowa, to try and compose herself after a hacking attack. See, that's a nightmare for anybody who gives speeches. But what's going on with Hillary? Clinton's campaign released a health care statement in July confirming hypothyroidism as well as allergies. The former Secretary of State takes Armour Thyroid to treat an underactive thyroid. I thought we'd bring in Dr. Mark Starr, author of Hypothyroidism Type 2, The Epidemic. He's been on the program with me before. Mark, first of all, does this coughing spell mean that she's got a real bad thyroid issue? What does that mean to you?
I had hoarseness, which is one of the symptoms of low thyroid. Before I was treated properly, you can get you can have allergies. That's probably exactly what she has. A lot of the thyroid patients have numerous allergies, and so I'm not sure how long she's been on her thyroid, but the dosages that had been prescribed for the last 40 years, over 40 years, are a fraction of what they were during the first half of the 20th century. So the vast majority of people, once they began treating blood tests instead of patients, which was a really, really bad idea beginning in 1970, hardly ever get enough thyroid to resolve the hypothyroidism. So until they start keep increasing the dosage, she's likely to have continued problems. But the doctors have been taught to treat blood tests instead of the patients for 40-plus years, and it's a very poor substitute for the main issue is trying to get the patient well instead of trying to get normal blood test results.
And doctor, we of course know that she's running for the highest office in the land with this issue with the thyroid. Is that really serious? Is that something that we as voters should be concerned about?
Well, you're much more likely to have a heart attack, heart failure, diabetes, depression, cold intolerance. As a matter of fact, I believe she's on desiccated thyroid. Isn't that one of the...
Armour Thyroid.
Armour Thyroid, yeah. Right. Well, the Armour Meat Company was the only producer of thyroid medication for the first half of the 20th century.
Huh.
And unfortunately, the doctors, actually Big Pharma, figured out how to mass produce the synthetic thyroid in the 1960s, and by 1970, all the doctors were mandated to treat the synthetic thyroid, and the endocrinologists are taught to treat that the desiccated armor thyroid is similar to snake oil these days.
Oh, boy. That's just what we need. All right, doctor, thanks. Thanks for that insight. I really appreciate it. Granite City, Illinois, in Madison County out there in Illinois. Listen to this story. It doesn't get any sadder. A Granite City man whose body was recovered from a pond near the entrance to Low Water Dam on Choteau Island in the city of Madison reportedly drowned. The Madison County coroner has identified the man as Mark Miller, 54 years old of Granite City. But what happened? Miller was flying drones with his 11-year-old son when one of the drones malfunctioned and crashed on the ice. He told his son, sit in the vehicle while he went to retrieve the drone. And that's when he walked across the ice to retrieve the drone, and he fell through. Miller's son, 11 years old now, waited for him to return. He told authorities that he sat in the vehicle for about 3 hours. 3 hours until it ran out of gas, just sitting there waiting for Dad to return. The boy then eventually left the car and began walking to get some help. A concerned motorist saw him walking down the road, picked him up, and took him to the sheriff's department. Jeez. And when Linda Myers' 19-year-old son, Taylor, died from a tragic gun shooting accident at the end of 2014, she looked beyond her grief and saw a way to honor him and ensure that others live too. Surgeons from the University of California, San Francisco, harvested his lungs, pancreas, kidneys, liver, and heart. The California Transplant Donor Network liaison says that she was never likely to meet the recipients of her son's organs, but she held out hope. Well, last month, after a series of extraordinary events, the mother of three was able to hear her son's heartbeat once again in another man. Now both she and the man who received Taylor's heart are working to boost organ donation awareness through their story. Isn't that amazing? And the Islamic State terror group apparently is preparing another Mumbai-style attack to be carried out in Europe by special forces now of militants. This according to the European Union. They say the so-called Islamic State has developed a new combat-style capability to carry out a campaign of large-scale terrorist attacks on a global stage. Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi on this. Jerry, this is not good news at all.
No, it's not at all, George. And this film that was released by ISIS today was very frightening. It showed the attackers from Paris, nine of the attackers, and other horrific acts. It looks like it was filmed in Syria. But what it makes clear is that the ISIS intent to even attack Great Britain is expressed in the film. And it emphasizes the degree to which these Paris attacks were prepared, staged, planned. The terrorists who participated, this was like their last will and testament. It was a very frightening film, and it has been circulated worldwide.
Well, if they are planning larger-scale attacks, to me that's organized, where they're going to hit certain areas with as much firepower as they have, Jerry.
Well, in fact, George, they're telegraphing that in this video, because it ends, the video of the Paris attackers ends with Cameron and giving a speech in Great Britain and saying we're going to hit Great Britain next. So it looks like a staged, planned attack in a worldwide, increasingly worldwide ISIS movement that's telegraphing its actions, and it's pretty frightening. It seems to me like it's an escalation of the ISIS violence, and we've got to take it very seriously.
Indeed. Jerry, thank you so much. The U.S. Treasury says that it considers Russian President Vladimir Putin to be corrupt. The U.S. government has already imposed sanctions on Mr. Putin's aides, but it's thought to be the first time it has directly accused him of corruption. A spokesperson told the BBC that none of the questions or issues needs to be answered, that they're pure fiction. Who knows? Last week, a United Kingdom public inquiry said that Putin had probably approved the murder of an ex-spy. In a moment, we talk about Cold War III. Craig Reed joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. William Craig Reed served as a U.S. Navy diver, submarine weapons technician, espionage photographer for special ops aboard the various nuclear fast attack submarines. He earned commendations for completing secret missions during the Cold War. Has written several books. One is called Red November, Inside the Secret U.S.-Soviet Submarine War, and the other is Cold War III, How the U.S. Navy Can Defeat Putin and Halt Climate Change. That's interesting. And so here he is on Coast to Coast. William, you bring back memories of my 9 years in the Navy. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for being here, and hope you enjoyed your time as much as I did.
I did. I did not see nearly as much action and excitement as you did. I was a public affairs officer, but I did meet some great guys that we've remained friends over the years. And I had a good time doing it, too. The unit got called up to Desert Storm with General Schwarzkopf a month after I retired. It was interesting, but they all came back okay, and it was just a great 9 years for me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, great to hear that.
Now, you tell me a little bit more about you. How did you become the author you are after spending all these years doing what you did?
Well, actually, it was my father who gave me the impetus to begin writing. He was an author. He wrote several books. In fact, one book was the autobiography of the director, John Huston. You may remember Moby Dick and Night of the Iguana and a number of different movies. And he, rolled that ball downhill and fell in my lap, and so now I'm a writer as well.
There you are. Now tell us, you served as a U.S. Navy diver. What were some of the things that you would dive for? Was it to help repair ships, or what did you do?
Well, it depends. Some of it was not so fun, where you would have to go find some things that might have been dropped over the side in some very interesting waters near the harbor. Others were basically missions that I did write about, some that I can't write or talk about. Some of them were in concert with some Navy SEAL teams.
Okay.
We do a lot of joint ops back in the day. But most of it was fairly routine, checking various different things on submarines, making sure they were clear of any obstacles or listening devices or perhaps retrieving certain things, but also photographic operations.
I've got the luxury of talking to you about two of your books, so basically two separate subjects, and I'm going to enjoy myself doing this. When I was in the Navy, William, I was always told that the deterrent to war was our submarines, that our land-based missiles could still do what they had to do, but they would take a much longer time getting to their target. But submarines, both Soviet then and ours, were always there and ready to go within minutes. And I never forgot that.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Because even today, even with our sophisticated capabilities, submarines can still hide. Very difficult to find them, especially the newer, more stealth versions of these submarines. So the game has always been cat and mouse, where we have been trying to find them and they've been trying to find us. And that's the topic of my first book, Red November, on that topic. And also some of that's in Cold War III.
Can we add China to the mix now with submarines?
No question about it. They actually launched a ballistic missile off the coast of Los Angeles. This was in 2010.
I remember that.
5 miles off the coast.
Yeah, and everybody, of course, denied it was them, but it was obvious, huh?
Oh, there's no question about it. At the time, Obama was in Beijing, and there were some issues going on with currencies and so forth, and they were just sending a shot across our bow. It was unarmed, but a very clear indication that they are sophisticated in their submarine capabilities.
And they were not in U.S. territorial waters, right? They were outside?
Just barely.
Just barely. They knew exactly where to be, did they? Now, in your book, Red November, you talk about Kennedy and Khrushchev. And I was, 12 years old during the Cuban Missile Crisis. But I remember it. I remember it, and I remember how close we all felt, my parents felt, that we were on the brink of another war, and this one would be a big war. What happened? Who backed down first?
Well, you brought up the topic about finding other submarines, and that's how this all began, because we lost the signal that allowed us to be able to find those submarines. They would transmit every so often, and we would triangulate that using sophisticated radio triangulation. And they went to a new, very short burst signal. We couldn't find it, so we developed new technology. My father was actually helping to spearhead that program. He found the signal and figured it out. They sent him to Washington to work with the NSA to figure out the technology behind it. And that's how Kennedy actually wound up backing down Khrushchev. That's the untold story. And we used that technology to find four Foxtrot submarines during the Cuban Missile Crisis that came over. They were going to take out the blockade. They were equipped with nuclear torpedo, each one.
Oh, boy.
And the untold story in this book is that all four came within moments of firing one of those torpedoes at our blockade, which would have started World War III. I actually interviewed officers who were aboard those Soviet submarines. These were Soviet officers who told me the true story about what had happened.
I bet they didn't want to have to launch, but if they were ordered to, they'd do what they have to do.
Absolutely.
Frightening times. I guess does the world really understand, William, how close we really came to this disaster, to this World War III?
I don't think so. We all heard about the story, you know, the 13 days in October. And yes, there were very heated moments there where there might have been land-based missiles fired, but that was not the real crux of this crisis. It was those four submarines with their nuclear torpedoes. One torpedo would have taken out a dozen of our warships.
Wow.
Absolutely. We would have had to retaliate.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, started World War III.
I was told that Kennedy called Khrushchev and said, listen, we have got to solve this. I have generals I cannot control much longer. You've got to help me. Do you think that was true?
Yes, it was really on both sides of the fence. And what happened was there was a memo sent, and no one really knew the contents of that memo, but my research uncovered that it was the coordinates to the Foxtrot submarines, because up until that moment, Khrushchev pounded on the table and said, I will not allow you to blockade Cuba. He was adamant, because he knew he had four submarines with nuclear torpedoes who could take out this blockade in a moment, until Kennedy sent him that memo that had the coordinates, and they got the coordinates from this boresight technology that my father had actually helped deploy.
Interesting take. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk about Cold War III, because we may very well be right in the middle of another big situation. And this has to do with Vladimir Putin and the United States. We'll get your take on that. It's an amazing story. Cold War III with William Craig Reed with us on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, by the way, don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where we send out information all the time. Webmaster Lex, we keep him up 24/7. The guy gets no sleep. Okay, welcome back to Coast with William Craig Reed with us, one of his latest works, Cold War III. And William, the U.S. Treasury Department is saying now that Vladimir Putin is one corrupt fellow. What do you think of that?
Well, they're throwing all kinds of labels on Putin, but he is one smart fellow. This guy knows how to play chess, and we are absolutely in a currency war with Russia and China, and we are losing that war. He is making some tremendous moves that will lock up resources and could potentially cause us a lot of economic issues.
I would suspect one of the reasons that the price of oil has plummeted is a squeeze play on him. What do you think?
No question. It's a squeeze play on him, and it's also a squeeze play on the Iranians. Saudi Arabia,
right,
of course, doesn't like Iran, and they are glutting oil, but we are actually in bed with the Saudis, as much as that may not appear to be the case. But we, of course, back in the 70s, created the petrodollar, and they went along with it, as well as the other OPEC countries. And there is a glut now for those reasons, to keep Putin in play and to keep Iran under wraps as well.
I suspect Saddam Hussein, when he was running Iraq, wanted to get rid of the petrodollar for something else, and that may be a reason why they took him out.
No question. He actually did do that. He switched to the euro. That was in the year 2000. And, of course, Bush said, don't do that. He adamantly said he was going to continue accepting euros, and we rolled tanks across his desert in 03. And by 04, Iraq was back on the petrodollar. Same thing happened in Libya, Muammar Gaddafi. We orchestrated that coup to get him to not accept gold. And, of course, Syria, Iran, you know, the list goes on, every OPEC country out there.
Why is it so important to have the dollar as the petrodollar?
Well, we're $20 trillion in debt. The only thing propping us up is the petrodollar. So it feels warm and fuzzy. We're kind of like frogs in a warm pot of water that's about to boil. The problem is that the only thing propping us up is the U.S. dollar. It is up right now because oil is down. There's more demand for oil. So therefore, since all oil trades are done in dollars, there's more demand for the dollar. When there's more demand for the dollar, our economy is nice and warm. But when that rug gets pulled, as it will before long, we're going to be in trouble.
Now, I agree with you. I think Putin is a master at what he's doing. Not necessarily does that make him a good guy, but I think he is outsmarting most of our politicians. What's the next step in his chess game?
Well, he's already made several chess moves that are very alarming. The same week he invaded Ukraine, he strong-armed seven nations in the UN to grant him exclusive rights to all the oil and gas and all the treasure trove in the Sevastokolsk in the Arctic. He did it again just recently. Across the entire North Pole area, the Lomonosov Ridge, a trillion tons of oil and gas. He basically owns Boardwalk and Park Place now, and he's building submarines to patrol that area, to patrol the sea routes that are opening up across the Northern Sea Route. And he's also built a doomsday weapon that could really take us into a serious global economy hit.
What kind of doomsday weapon?
The new Khabarovsk submarine has been built to do one thing. It's a nuclear attack submarine. It's important to know that Putin's father was a submariner. So Putin knows what submarines can do, and he also knows what the sea lanes are for. 90% of all trade, everything you buy at Costco, comes across the ocean. 90% of all the oil in the world goes through six straits, like the Strait of Hormuz and Malacca. This Khabarovsk submarine is equipped with six massive torpedoes, 10 times bigger than anything ever built.
Nukes?
It can go 6,000 nautical miles at 100 knots, and they have 100 megaton nuclear payload on each of those torpedoes.
My God. So when we talked about the possibility of nukes during the Cuban Missile Crisis, these far outweigh those.
It's the Cuban Missile Crisis on super steroids.
On steroids, for sure. How many of those submarines does he have?
Well, he's building the first now, but there are plans for several. They say 2019, but really we're talking sea trials sometime next year. So with an accelerated timetable, we could see these out as early as the end of next year. And then he can threaten all the global economy. That's his plan, is to lock up currencies. He wants the ruble to be the backing for oil and gas trade.
I mean, do you think he'll get to the point where he would use a sub like this?
His plan is not to use it. His plan is to threaten its use. All he has to do is threaten to take out a sea strait. That's it. That's what we're seeing in Iran. It's the threat that's causing us to back down.
What if we play as bluff?
Then then we might see another side of Putin. He might just position his submarines and other platforms near one of these straits. What's happening is the Northern Sea Route is opening up, and so a massive amount of merchant shipping is going through that route. Well, he controls all of that. He's fortified all these bases, about a dozen of them up there. So if he threatens to take out the other straits and leaves that one open, then the shipping routes will be in jeopardy, and other countries will begin to ship more past his route, and he can charge for it.
Well, what are we doing to counteract this?
Almost nothing. They've got 40-plus icebreakers, the Russians do, and we have one, maybe two, that's both of them are crippled.
My God.
We have zero plans to build more. We're actually turning the dial down on our ice exercises up in the Arctic with our submarines. We're turning the dial down on building more submarines in our Navy. We're going backwards, and he is massively going forward.
Now, nobody is supposed to own anything at the Arctic, so how can he just take over and start drilling for oil, gas, and everything else?
Well, there's a thing called the UNCLOS Treaty. It's basically the United Nations Treaty on the Law of the Sea. And there are 158 nations who signed this many years ago, all but one country. There are eight that border the Arctic. 158 nations signed this. The U.S. is the only country that did not. We don't have a seat at the table. So Russia can petition all they want. The U.S. can do nothing. We have no say in the game.
Now, I have got to believe that we are not dumb technologically, William. So for every move Putin might make to come up with a bigger submarine, I would guess someplace, somewhere, we've got some technology we've hidden away.
Well, we certainly do have some incredible technology. I actually talk about that in my Cold War III book. I'm the only author that got to see some of this in action during what's called ICEX. I mentioned the ice exercise in the Arctic. I went aboard a submarine below the ice and saw underwater Twitter, saw some amazing technologies that are being used. DARPA has built what they call basically underwater robots, if you will, that can actually sit there and wait to hear something, and then a small robot will break off from this and actually trail the platform. There's incredible technologies, but we're still way behind because we only have a very small amount of funding going toward these things, whereas Putin is really pushing the envelope.
So we don't have any secret weapon, really?
Nothing very secret. Arctic Submarine Lab is building some things.
Darn.
There's a few other platforms out there, but the next generation of Virginia class is about it, and that's many, many years away.
How wealthy is Vladimir Putin, William?
They are still sitting on a lot of cash. They made a lot of money in their last decade on oil primarily, but mostly gas. They just cut a $400 billion gas deal with China, by the way, not being done in U.S. dollars. That'll be done in rubles and yuan. So there's still plenty of dollars sitting there. It looks like Russia's hurting, but they're sitting on half a trillion dollars worth of cash.
Is it all about money?
It's mostly about money. If you look at, again, what has kept the U.S. economy afloat, it is this petrodollar. And that is the main reason why we see all these conflicts going on. That's the positioning that's happening. We saw China fire some volleys, two of them, one in October, one in January. They're positioning so they can become a reserve currency because the International Monetary Fund is about to vote on that, and they want the yuan to be one of those reserve currencies for the same reason that the U.S. wants to maintain the petrodollar. It is really all about money.
Are these countries betting on our demise?
they are not only betting on it, they are pushing us toward it.
And we're following suit, aren't we? We're just going right along with it.
No question about it. And China really has become aware of the fact that they're not going to get back the money that we borrowed. It's probably never going to happen. We're too far in debt. We've made some serious, serious bad mistakes, if you will, monetarily here. And so they're looking at ways that they can mitigate that loss and becoming a reserve currency and pulling the plug on the petrodollar, things like that will help them to not see that hit so hard.
So they basically have felt that the money they've invested, the loans to us, they're gone.
Well, anyone with half a brain would see that, given that we're $20 trillion debt,
and we can't pay that back,
getting that back are probably pretty low.
No, if they asked for it today, there's no way we could do it.
Not a chance.
And nobody else is going to buy new debt to replace theirs. Now, with Saudi Arabia and the price of oil so low right now, how long can they hold out at that price?
Well, they've got quite a bit in reserve as well. They've got actually about $750 billion in reserve. And so they can go for a while, but they're not going to want to go probably more than another year or so.
Because they do literally pay off their residents, their constituency, to keep them from rioting and looting and going crazy, don't they?
Without question. It's a real catch-22 for them because they're seeing Iran now become the leader on the block there in the Middle East. And the only way they can help to try to mitigate that is by keeping the oil glut going, not putting more dollars into Iranian pockets. But additionally, they're looking to buy some time because they've got to figure out what they're going to do. And that could be, in their mind, them getting a nuclear weapon as well.
What do you see right now, William, as our, United States, biggest issue or problem?
Are you still
with us? Nope. We lost them. There we go again, folks. Let's see if we can reboot him in, just in case. William, you still there? Well, he, folks, is long gone, so we'll try to get him in here and get him back on. It seems like every time we get into something controversial, something happens. Happened last week, too, where I actually thought something physically had happened to our guest. And we finally found him, and he thought that he was having some massive technology issues. And William Craig Reed's situation, I think it was on just a nice, clean landline. His quality sounded fantastic. But just when he was getting into controversy, he disappears. So we shall see if we get him. By the way, don't forget, in our third and fourth hour, we're going to talk with Jason Martell about Planet X. And I'm looking forward to that. A couple scientists feel as if there is another huge planet in our solar system way out there. And some of this echoes some of the things that Zachariah Sitchin has written about and so many other people. And what we will do, by the way, if we get him back, well, let me talk to you, Tom. Did you try a cell phone, too? Let's do that. And if we have to put him on a cell phone for a little bit, we will do our best to do that. If not, I'll do open lines next hour. No big deal. No loss. So we'll try to do that, too. But we've been talking with William Craig Reed about his latest work called Cold War III. And he really believes that the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, is doing his thing. There he is. I think we got you back. I guess you were saying something too controversial. The boys got you, didn't they?
Must have been.
That happens. That happens. Tell me what happened to your line. Did you just disappear?
I have no idea. Everything was working just fine.
Could you hear me?
No, not at all.
You couldn't. Okay, that's strange. All right, we'll have the text check it just in case. Anyways, the big question was, what do you think is our biggest issue facing us as Americans? And then you were gone.
As I mentioned, I do talk about that in my Cold War III book, and it is this issue that we have with the reserve currencies, but also we have a lot of other issues in terms of the Middle East, et cetera, you know, terrorism and so on. And the way that we get out of that is with innovation. We can pull the rug on Middle Eastern countries. We can actually defeat Putin, Iran, China, and even Mother Nature with innovation. One key one from the Naval Research Laboratories that is absolutely groundbreaking.
Well, we're going to need to do something innovative and exciting. And as you look at the past administrations, William, that we've had, going back to the first Bush and then Clinton and then Bush again, do you think they were all doing a good job or all a poor job when it comes to Russia?
Well, without question, a poor job, unfortunately. Putin has been likened to Hitler, not at all the case. I've done quite an extensive portrayal of him in my latest book. And if you look at his demeanor, he's very strong and controlling, but he's also very protective of his Rusky. He calls them Rusky, which means family, his Russian family. He considers the entire country as his family. And we wheel missiles into Turkey and so on, and yet what we want to do is to make Ukraine a NATO country. Well, he's not going to allow that because it's like wheeling missiles into Cuba. Also, he's got five gas pipes going through that country that
That's right.
feed Europe, a third of their gas. That's a huge part of his dollar. So he is not going to allow that to happen. He sees that as a threat, and he will fight back. You back a bulldog into a corner and poke him with a stick, he's gonna bark back.
All right, stick with us. We're going to hit this break and come back at the top of the hour with phone calls and more questions for you. William Craig Reed, our special guest, latest work is called Cold War III, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com.